Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Robbie from Cowboy Ventures, and joined, as always, by Tim Chen, who runs Essence VC. And today we're very excited to have Moses Gutman on, who's the CEO and co-founder of ClearML, which is an end-to-end platform that works with companies on deep learning, machine learning, and Gen AI. So it's a very, very relevant topic, and we're very excited to have Moses on. So thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to meet you guys.
I'm looking at the ClearML project, and there's a lot of components to it. And each one of these, I think, could be an independent company. You've got experiment manager, you've got data management capabilities, ML ops. Talk a bit about where you started and like what the progression has been. Like, what was the initial ClearML focus?
I would like to expand this discussion because that's always interesting. So, and you guys are coming from VC, so it can be a really interesting conversation. So from a VC perspective, actually any money person will tell you, you have to be laser focused. Like you have to build something and you have to be the best at it. And if you're the best at it, then it means that you can sell it to someone. But with engineering products, some problems, you cannot have a single solution because the problem expands beyond a single failure point. And if the problem expands beyond a singular failure point, that means you have to have a few solutions. No one likes that. The moment you try to pick and choose a few solutions, the only approach that actually works for large companies is go for open source. And basically the way that they pay for it with engineering resources because they have to do all the stitching and maintenance themselves. That's it. Ton of work, but no one else will do that for them, right? Every product will only cater for itself, not for the combination of other products working with it. And that was very clear to us from the get-go, that if we're just doing one thing, we're not solving the actual problem. The actual problem is more complicated than just saying, we have a terrific experiment management. That is nice, but that is not enough of a value for a company. It's just the lowest hanging fruit, if you will, like the first step, the first problem to solve. But actually, it doesn't provide an immediate value. It's just a necessity, for example. And if you're just solving the data aspect of things, that's also a necessity, but not enough. So if you don't have automation on top of that, then the fact that you just sold your data catalog and versioning, it's terrific. But that's not an immediate value to scale things up where the problem is, where you can see the value. So our approach from the get-go was we want to build a very good infrastructure that we can add modules on top, make sure that it's open so users can basically build their own, use our module on top, use someone else's module. This is fine. The idea is that they have this unified layer that they can connect to, so they have maximum visibility and they can start to automate. This is through an open source module that we released, as you mentioned, like that each module could be a company by its own or use any external or internal solution they already have working. That was a decision that we took very early on. It was very counterintuitive to a lot of people. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think the what's fun part about this space or any space is you have a pattern where people feel like there is a lot of potential growth, but a company will come out of the gates and it's like, I totally doing something different and surprises you. And the surprise ones are ones that break out as well. But it's hard because you also see the other side where so many other ones fail, right? That's actually part of this discussion is to learn why things work. Because I don't think just because one thing has done differently means the company has worked well. And as part of the question to you is we've seen so many companies definitely want to do a lot of things, right? And I saw one of your posts are comparing, contrasting, I think back in 2022, comparing, contrasting MLOps, and you have like 13 boxes. Some at 4, some at 5. You're the one that everything. And I think conventional wisdom is like, if you're doing everything means nobody knows truly know what you're doing well. And that's why there's a lot of advice and suggestions of like, and I've seen companies, they struggle because they're too much. It's like, hey, Tim, we got compared to this other incumbent with, and we just never win that battle. We end up have to focus. At least we have a shot to be able to get into enterprises. And I wonder, how do you find your traction? Is the open source really your biggest funnel? And how did that grow? that leads into Let's Add More projects. And, you know, people love this sort of comprehensive approach. Part of the question is like, why did you choose to build so many things? Is it based on the customer demand or is it based on considerations? Yeah.
So this is a good point. To us, it was, so when we looked at other open source projects that we liked, we looked at them and said, okay, is that single open source project solves an entire problem? So think databases. If I go to a database, I need to make sure that I can do everything that I can with the database. So these days, and it really changed. So these days, it means pushing data into it, querying the data, making sure that it scales, and somehow providing me a way to create dashboards on top. We're now seeing more and more databases adding that because everyone else is just adding it on top of the database. And if you don't have that solution that works with your database, you have to provide it. So if a third-party solution works with that, you're good. If you don't, you have to provide it. Why? Because the users will have to have that. That's part of understanding your data in scale. And what we discovered back when we built ClearML internally is if we're missing a component, we cannot automate. And at the end, our goal was to automate things. And if we're missing a component and that breaks the automation, that means that we have to provide it. And that was the leading thought, is as long as you can automate the process without that component, you're good to go. And that kind of triggered priorities internally. So if we can basically say, yeah, but you can use something else to do that and you can still achieve the automation part, then we're good. Then if we end up having like the spare time for it, terrific. If we don't, then our users will use a different solution, which is just fine. That was the leading thought. The second one is, can we actually solve it based on the infrastructure that we have internally? And when we designed the internal infrastructure, we said, look, we are going to make like the underlying infrastructure relatively complicated. I'll give an example. We have three databases running in the back end, and that's the baseline. Like three different databases doing totally different things. And the reason why we chose those to begin with is because we had this vision on what each database needs to do for the system from the get-go so we can build on top of it. Even if we're not using it now, we wanted it to be there from the design of the system to the implementation of the system. So later we can add features without paying a huge penalty on, oh yeah, but now we have to support something else. We already had that experience. And that kind of led the way with growing and, you know, adding more and more modules. Going back to your question on users, I think that actually what resonates well with users is the ability to, one, have a, let's call it a one-stop shop. So you don't have to worry about a lot of different things and how they connect. But if I'm being honest about what brings users is the ability to very quickly, let's call it automate, but sometimes it's just the ability to run your code on a remote machine. Of course, if you can run that once, then you can automate that later on. But that ability is key in a more complicated situation. And that's why ClearML actually works very well with more complicated scenarios like GPUs as part of the process. So when we started, it was mostly computer vision, then NLP started, and now we have GenAI, where even small GPU machines are not enough. The more complicated the process is, the better you are with a good infrastructure that allows you to automate things and remotely launch jobs, work on remote machines, because that becomes more and more difficult, especially when this is always part of your R&D process. Like, this is not production old school, like, hey, I wrote my code here, you run it now, and it should cater for, I don't know, millions of users daily. No, this is, I literally cannot run it on my laptop. I have no idea if it actually works. Then you run it on another machine, then after 20 hours it breaks, you have no idea why. And now things are a bit more complicated. And this is why like the infrastructure part of things, like the DevOps aspects, are very important to us. And this is, I think, one of the key features of ClearML today.
Yeah, it's interesting being the one-stop shop, because long-term, that means that customers can come to you for a lot of different things. You're super sticky. And it's also why once a database is accepted or gets to scale, it can be really hard to displace. But early on, it can be really tough because it's hard to develop user trust for such a broad set of capabilities versus saying like, oh, hey, I'm gonna just like take this one function from you. And if they don't know you, they're like, okay, well, that's fine. Because if it doesn't work, it's not a huge deal because I'm only depending on you for this one thing. And then you grow over time, which is probably the more traditional path for venture-backed companies. But I'm curious how open source plays into this, because open source is a way that you can develop more user trust. So you can go after kind of a bigger set of use cases early on. Was that how you thought about why ClearML should be open source?
100%. First, if you're selling to engineers, it's an easier sell if you're selling open source. It creates trust and transparency. This is not a black box. If you're not happy with it, there is a way for you to change it, also a way for you to complain. And the second thing, we like to think of ourselves as, we call it community-led products, which means basically a lot of our features came from the community itself. And if we get something wrong, people will really yell at us on why did you break X, or this used to work, or hey, I want to do Y and I can't. How would I do that? A lot of the features that came into ClearML were, you know, requests from the community. And from the get-go, it was very clear to us that the only way to build this type of trust is open source. And the only way to actually get immediate feedback from users is open source. And the way that we work is we have our Slack channel and GitHub issues, and everyone in the company needs to be there, either answer questions or see what people are saying. First, it creates this feedback to the actual engineers writing the code of the product. That is terrific. You don't have to convince people that what they do actually matters. They see people telling them directly, hey, this is awesome. Or if they unfortunately introduce a bug, they'll tell them, hey, you screwed up, like fix it. And then they fix it immediately. Like the immediate feedback and the way to basically push fixes, get ideas on things to build, get some feedback. Hey, we want to better understand how X is working inside the product because the product itself is complicated. That's terrific. And the only way to do that is with community. And today, community is basically open source. Like that's the only way to create the trust and transparency is actually open source.
So I guess maybe talk back to the question, how did you grow the open source? Because I think when I saw you rebranded, or the ClearML becomes the major brand, there's already thousands of organizations using you, which is super impressive when there's a lot of options to use bits and pieces. But back in like, I don't know, 2020-ish, I don't know, you have all those products already out there in the open source project?
No, we had a lot. Like in the last 2 years, we actually grew a lot of our products. Again, you know, community told us, hey, we want that. For example, we added a feature that we said, we're not sure it's that's important, like reports or embedding graphs inside third parties. We're like, really, is that something that interests you? And everyone's, no, you have to have that. This is important for us because we have to present it to our management. And if we don't, they like us less, or they don't know what we were doing. So this is something that we haven't thought about. And everyone's, no, this is important. So we have to have that. And we didn't. Like in 2020 or 2021, we just had the basic stuff. And the basic stuff was solved an immediate problem, which was back then, even now, you don't have a lot of options. If you want to run your code on a machine on the cloud and you're not a DevOps person, this is really hard. The more complicated your code is, the harder it is. So you have to understand images like AMIs, if it's Amazon, or VDIs, if it's GCP or Azure. You have to understand Kubernetes if your company is working with Kubernetes. You have to package your entire code base inside a Docker, which means someone needs to provide you with a Docker registry access, and you have to understand how to build it. And you build multiple Dockers and you have no idea where you put them. So that means that your code is running somewhere, but you have no idea which version of the code actually worked. There's a lot of DevOps that became part of R&D, and DevOps was developed for production, which means everything needs to be stable. But now when you have deep learning and generative AI users actually in a need to develop something and have DevOps capabilities as part of the R&D. So nothing is stable. The code base constantly changes. Things break. But they still have to run it on remote machines in scale, have access to databases, et cetera. Then things get a bit more complicated. And that was a main problem that we solved. But in order to solve that, we had to make sure that they have visibility into what's going on, which meant more than just, you know, console outputs. So that means if they produce some output, like a model or a file or something, they had the ability to quickly store it somewhere else outside of the container, than the machine it was running on, and then later download that, look into that, and maybe report stuff in runtime so they understand if it's actually doing what it's supposed to be doing. Think about the problem itself. That sounds like they need to monitor an application, but they don't actually have an application. It's not stable enough. They don't want to connect to like Datadog's APIs because they're not monitoring the machine on the one hand. On the other hand, they still do need that kind of level of information. And that was the initial problem that ClearML actually solved. And from that, it kind of grew into expanding capabilities in terms of automation and data, et cetera.
I want to talk a bit about the process of spinning ClearML out from Allegro, because we do talk to a lot of founders that go through some version of this. A lot of times they'll start a project at a bigger company and then work on making that an independent company separate from wherever they started it. So what did you learn during that process, and what was maybe harder than expected?
Never trust anyone that answers that question. That is my that is my immediate answer. It's never easy. I was lucky enough to have very good partners, but it's never easy. And it's a process, and it's just a long process that you cannot actually cut, to be honest. And it's always very, very complicated to carve out technology, to spin it out, to reset a company. And I was lucky enough to have terrific partners to work with, and they were flexible enough in that and had the understanding of the space. And, you know, it's always important to never drink your own Kool-Aid, understand reality, and understand where you're at and the potential, but it's never easy. It's a process, and assume that you'll be spending between half a year or a year on that process, because it's never, like, no one knows when they start, that's my clear new vision, this is what we want. It's always a discussion, and it takes time to internalize, okay, that's probably a better solution than what we have now, or this is kind of the right path for the company, and we all have our own egos, etc. So it's just, I was just lucky enough to work with terrific partners. Sometimes it's not as easy, but it's never an easy process, and it's always very long.
So one thing I want to ask you about, you know, we had a few guests just recently come on and debate open source, how much you should open source, how you should open source, right? And I think in your case, correct me if I'm wrong, you have probably most of your product core logic open source. And so one is maybe talk about what is your paid product and what is your open source? What's the delineation here? And I'm just curious, like, how do you draw that line? Like, at this point, what is the philosophy of we should open source these, we shouldn't open source these, and any lessons in that as well?
First of all, I have no idea if we're right or wrong. I mean, we're still trying to figure it out, like everyone. It's constantly changing. I can say a few things. I can say that when we started the Amazon debacle with MongoDB and Elastic just happened before. And we saw that and we said, yeah, we definitely should use SSPL and not Apache 2, which was our go-to license, because cannibalizing your work by a huge company is awful. We saw that and said, okay, we're just fine with companies using the open source building on top of it. This is terrific. They don't have to pay us. We're good. Even though the more complicated your product is, the less chances are of someone actually contributing. Because it's very hard to onboard and understand how to actually contribute to the product itself. But community is more important. So this is fine. And this is exactly what we signed up for, is as long as there is no cannibalization of the business by a third party, it's fine. We'll take the risk. In terms of where we draw the line, that's a terrific question. We still have these internal discussions on what to release where. Generally speaking, what we believe is if your team is relatively small, no one will spend the dollars anyhow. So if your team is small and we can help you build your team, then this is free. Like, that's the bottom line. If your team is larger, or the problem that we're solving will only happen when you hit a certain threshold in terms of scale or your product or adoption or something else, and we'll just say, we're not helping the community. No one is going to use it anyhow, not from the get-go. We'll have zero feedback from most of our users. There's no reason to open it. There's really no value other than say, hey, another feature is out there. And it's always very hard to maintain if you're pushing a feature to the open source community. So you are always paying a penalty for adding a feature to the open source, because the level of flexibility and support that you have to maintain for the open source is a lot higher than for the paid tier, where you can basically say, hey, we support X, Y, and Z for this specific feature. Open source is like, no, that's like the community demands. At the end of the day, you'll have to provide it. So, and most of the features in the product are open source and free to use. Anything that is really only needed for scale and enterprises, then that part we kind of say for the enterprise, say, okay, at the end of the day, someone needs to pay for it. Otherwise, the entire product will die.
I also wanted to make sure that we got your perspectives on Gen AI and open source too, because there have been a lot of debates on whether it makes sense for models and tooling to be open versus closed source, kind of like the race for capabilities, plus a lot of academics have been involved. And so what's your perspective on, for Gen AI in particular, what pieces make sense to be open source? And from a user perspective, how to think about whether like an open or closed source approach makes the most sense?
Right. So first of all, disclaimer, we have skin in the game here. My opinion is extremely tainted towards the open source, because this is basically what we preach. We preach, in a lot of cases, take an open source model and just retrain it on your own data. And that will probably outperform any off-the-shelf model that knows a lot of stuff about the world, but very little about your problem. And with a closed source model, or any model that serves everyone, you have no way to provide feedback. And we're true believers in feedback. That's kind of what started ClearML, the ability to continuously train something and provide feedback. And that essentially means that you have to retrain your own models internally. And in order to do that, you have to have the open source community. So the open source community helps with designing the models, maybe like a proof of concept of the model itself, which I think it's essential to the acceleration of the field. And we're seeing that, but assuming that an open source model will be as good as a closed source model for like consumer grade use cases, that's not realistic. So Llama 2 is terrific. It's not a match to GPT-4 or Claude 2 or any other consumer grade model out there, but it's a terrific proof of concept that you can build on top, and you can use that as a good starting point. From my perspective, it's like releasing a repository of code base. As long as this will not cannibalize your business, do that. It helps the community. This is how you build your next version, will build on top of someone else's repository as well. That makes sense. But if this is your main business, then of course it makes no sense for you to release it. That's how you make your money, and it's fine. Our specific perspective is for enterprise use cases, it makes very little sense to use a black box without the ability to provide feedback. Like, how would you control what you're using? And in order for you to control, you really have to train those models. There's no reason why you start from scratch. And this is why I'm saying that we have skin in the game here. That's basically automation. This is what ClearML does for a lot of those companies, is helping them adopt those models and train them internally, have full control over it. But that's a very different use case than the OpenAI's use case for consumers, where as a consumer, it works. It's awesome. I would pay $20 for that per month. That's a very good service that I'm getting. I just won't build automation on top of it because I have no idea what I'll end up getting, and I have no idea how to control it. That's something that comes along with it. Like, no one will use a database where you have no idea what your query will retrieve you the second time you ask. So
I'm curious, since we're on topic, well, topic LLMs, which is, of course, everyone's favorite topic every hour. At this point in life, I see Clara ML, your products definitely like follows all the MLOps platform. And then there's ClearGPT, right? Where it's actually you're hosting, you're able to help enterprise leverage LLMs, right? And I see Anthropic, Cohere, OpenAI, and sort of like a secure product there. Part of the question, just like how much shift of the conversations you're seeing from your user or customers, are they moving towards it? Or obviously use abandon, but like consider switching their focus to use LLMs a lot more. Are you seeing that trend happening, or this is just additional, like all of that sort of roadmap and investments remain the same? This is other things we're doing. Do you see that shift happening in even in terms of your audience? Or
so we need to improve the website on ClearGPT. But basically, ClearGPT is just another layer on top of ClearML. So at the end of the day, it's another layer of automation on top of what we currently have. So and this is consistent with every other module that we added into ClearML. So in different words, ClearGPT is basically a low code where you can ingest data, train your LLM, deploy it in like for QA, so you can provide feedback, retrain, etc., and then deploy it into your internal secure network. But all of that works on top of ClearML. So it's basically a lot of UI and automation and workflows that rely 100% on ClearML. And that means that ClearML is still like the engine behind the entire thing. This just makes it more accessible to users that can drive it internally inside companies. And the reason why we build it is to follow up on your question is our customers wanted that. So basically customers said, look, we're using ClearML and we're the AI guys. And then different business units will come to us, tell us, hey, we want to build something with an LLM. We have a very specific use case. We tried using one of the consumer grade APIs. The proof of concept worked, but when it failed, it was horrific. And we have to make sure that we can control the entire thing. You guys build it for us. And then the AI departments would say, terrific, but we have no idea on your data. Like the moment the model returns something in English, for example, that the model works, we have no idea if that's a correct answer. We have no idea how to take that data. So they had to find a way where they can provide an automation there on the one hand. On the other hand, create an interface for the different business units to actually take ownership and drive it internally, because it's all about the data. It's not about the models. The models are the same, right? Llama 1 and Llama 2, there's no real difference. It's about how to train the model with different approaches of the data, not the architecture itself that really changed. And what they wanted us to do is provide them with the ability to build, think of it as a custom UI for the internal departments to provide feedback, try different models, run them internally, and then deploy them when they do the, let's call it the maintenance or the integration under the hood. And that's actually started ClearGPT. We built that for a couple of customers. We said, okay, I think this is promising, because at the end of the day, a lot of companies are struggling with the same process. The drivers are always the users. At the end of the day, like the shift in Gen AI, like the huge shift is, it's generic enough that actually the data becomes the main driver. Contrary to before, where in classical machine learning and even in computer vision, you had to do a lot of very specific things to make things work. With Gen AI, like the data, just generic text is enough to get things to move and to return the right answers without doing a lot of pre-processing, which means the actual users can drive it. And this is what we ended up building. Like ClearGPT at the end is just another layer of abstraction, allowing different business units to drive adoption and work with their data and the models in a closer way, really providing this iterative feedback. And that's very different. And to your point, that's what we're seeing from a lot of our customers, kind of expanding into that realm, because the demand comes from within the organization itself.
So I'm curious, because we've asked this to a few Gen AI focused open source founders on the podcast, and depending on where someone sits, we'll get a different answer. But where do you see enterprises on their LLM journey on a scale of experimentation to production? Is it like way more on the experimentation side? Is it somewhere in the middle? Like, are you seeing real use cases with ClearGPT?
Right. We're seeing real use cases, but production, I think that for most enterprises, they're not in production stage, not surprisingly. And what we're seeing specific use cases. Generally speaking, they fall under productivity enhancements, which is a different way to say, we want to have some better way of doing knowledge retrieval. You have a lot of data, documents, et cetera, stuck somewhere, different departments. And we want to make sure that this data is not lost. No one will search through it. And we have a lot of information that we want to make sure that people can access. I think that that's a survey from McKinsey that 20% of the time is being spent on searching for answers inside an enterprise, which means if you're optimizing that process, you get a return on your investment relatively quickly. And this is one. And the problem there is it is not very straightforward to build. Even with vector databases and LLM as APIs and exploring that, that is a very good proof of concept that is very far from something that actually works. So it's terrific to do a proof of concept that you can say, hey, look what I built. The moment you are trying to build things on top of it, like put things in scale. So 100 documents and 100,000 documents, not the same, 100 million documents, different ballpark in terms of if you're getting 1% of them and you're 99% accurate in terms of your rank, but now the 1% is way too many documents, that means the entire solution is not usable, right? So there's a huge shift towards, okay, now we have to build our own internal solution on top of it, which is very challenging. And the other is support one way or another, whether this is internal support, product support, like thing ticketing systems, Slack channels, et cetera, things that contain a lot of information inside an organization and are very Q&A kind of approach where the knowledge is obviously there and everyone kind of assumes that they can build an NLM on top of it, but it's not very straightforward. And these two use cases, I think that they're mature enough for a lot of enterprises to adopt today. And the more sophisticated use cases, agents, et cetera, automation, that's still early for enterprises to adopt. Losing control so quickly is not something a company should do. And without the right guardrails and governance, it's very hard to actually add.
So last question we ask every founder, I think for you, we'd love to ask this particularly. I'm sure there's lots of founders actually come to you for advice, especially earlier stage ones that are looking to build something in an LLM or, you know, ML, ops infra, open source. What is the number one advice you keep giving to them, whoever someone's come to you asking for advice from you?
Think about the business model from the get-go is always important. If you cannot answer the business model question, then you have to keep looking. Because having a very successful open source project without an understanding on how that can mature into a proper business model is very challenging. Shifting will be very, very challenging once you have a successful open source project. You're setting the framework. And for example, like license is like kind of a trivial way to think about things. Like once you chose a license, you will not be able to switch. And that goes for a lot of the different features and business model around your open source project. You really have to understand what can happen. Like, of course, things change, but how you can build on top of it or create a vision on how one would lead to the other and where exactly you'll be bringing money back, monetizing on top of it, as you know, it's not often a word that is used with open source, but it is important. Like at the end of the day, someone needs to pay for your time and engineer's time, and the monetization aspect of things is really important. Without it, the project will end up dead. Like community-led projects are rarely very, very large. It's very hard to get a lot of people to support it. So really thinking about that, that's probably my number one advice.
Oh, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much, Moses. We really appreciate you doing this with us.
My pleasure.